Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
The Medicare annual election period deadline is almost here. I'm Meredith Vieira, here with examples of people who started their search for coverage at myhealthpolicy.com. Meet Larry. He likes doing things online, so he started
at myhealthpolicy.com. I took my time and found the coverage I was looking for, and done.
Next is Mary. When she wanted answers, she picked up the phone.
I wanted a local perspective on plans, so I called myhealthpolicy.com and done. Switched to a better plan.
And Michael.
I met with a local licensed insurance agent face-to-face and done.
Go to myhealthpolicy.com to compare top-rated Medicare Advantage plans in your area, including $0 premium plans, or call 1-800-GO-START. That's 1-800-GO-START. Meredith Vieira is a paid endorser. KF Agency operates MyHealthPolicy.com, not connected with or endorsed by the U.S. government or the federal Medicare program. A licensed insurance agent may call.
You know what I want? I want to talk sense.
Hello and welcome to the Rafters Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Samson Folk, and today I'm joined by Michael Pina, who is covering the league at large, the whole thing for SB Nation. Michael, how are you doing?
Good, Sam. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Trying to enjoy the weather, trying to enjoy the Raptors' very fast turnaround of the series on Orlando. Not as much anxiety anymore. It's a lot better for the heart rate. And yeah, just trying to enjoy it going forward. You said you're in Brooklyn. What are you doing there?
Living. yeah, moved here a couple of years ago, and I've been covering the Nets-Sixers series over the past couple weeks, which has been nice. Doesn't look like we're going to get another game in Brooklyn, most likely, so unless there's a miracle. So so the NBA will be out of New York City pretty soon, but I'm excited to talk about Raptors and everything else you want to cover, man.
Yeah, sure. Before we get into any type of Raptors things, do you have a Cliff Notes? I know most people who watch the NBA, like they try and watch most of the playoffs, but is there a Cliff Notes version that you would describe the Nets Sixers series as?
That's a good question. I mean, it's physical, obviously. There was an ejection in game four with Jimmy Butler and Jared Dudley. There's been some trash talking between Dudley and Ben Simmons through the media. And then I think, you know, in terms of just basketball, a big picture, I think that, you know, Joel Embiid's knee and the soreness that he's felt in his left knee for the past few months and how that impacts Philadelphia's ability to make a legitimate title run here and then going forward is obviously fascinating and relevant and could impact the league at large. So that's the big takeaway so far.
And so I guess we'll get into like the one little piece of it. Jared, how he's inserted himself into, you know, this crazy little, I guess, just development in the series. What's your takeaway on that? Is this something you might have expected, a Ben Simmons, Jared Dudley beef, or is it just this is the best thing to come out of it?
It is not what I expected heading in. I cannot lie to you, Sam, but it's fun. I think, you know, Dudley and Simmons are very different in their public personas, and I think, and just the how they present themselves. You know, Dudley loves talking, he loves attention, he loves conversing with the media on these tangents and monologues, and he's great like that. And Simmons is a lot more tight-lipped, and, you know, his answers are very clipped, and he does not like to open up, and one guy is, you know, over 10 years older than the other. And it's just, one guy is one of the most athletic players the league has ever seen. And the other guy is, you know, you would probably expect to see him at the YMCA, next weekend potentially. So, it's a fascinating contrast, and it's been really fun to watch.
Yeah. The juxtaposition of Ben Simmons, just unbelievable talent mixed with, you know, Jared Dudley's intellect and very try-hard attitude is—it's fascinating that those two ended up beefing. You never would have pictured it. I would have assumed it would have been Joel Embiid with somebody. Are you allegiant to the Brooklyn Nets? Is that your team since you live there?
No, not at all. I grew up in Boston, actually. So. I grew up a Celtics fan. Since I've covered the league, it's really difficult for me to extract myself emotionally from the outcomes of their playoff series. But, I try to stay as objective as possible. And I think I do a decent enough job, although, there's a lot of Raptors fans in my mentions regularly coming at me who are well aware of my fandom for Boston sports. So, yeah, I try to keep it as fair as possible, but I do, if I had to obviously pick one team that I actually have an emotional investment in, it would be the Celtics, I'd have to say.
Okay, so I have two questions for you, and then we'll hop into the Orlando and Toronto series. First question, you can answer them right back to back. First question, D'Angelo Russell or Caris LeVert going forward, who do you want to have more possessions as a creator? And the second question, would you draft Brad Stevens before Giannis? Feel free to answer however you want.
So I said I'll answer the second one first. I said that I try to be as objective as possible. So I'm definitely gonna have to go with Giannis on that one. And I think everyone in the Celtics organization would say the same thing. And I think Brad Stevens would also say the same thing, 10 times out of 10. The first question, I think, is a lot more interesting. And personally, I would go with Caris LeVert, who, despite, you know, Russell has had a tremendous season, obviously, and he's a most improved player candidate. I covered him his rookie year in L.A. when I lived out there. And, he's made leaps and bounds, I think, as a human being in terms of just his maturity level, as much as he has his game and his overall impact on offense. So, Caris LeVert, before he was injured, he was the all-star on this team. And I think he would have actually made the all-star team had he not hurt himself over D'Angelo Russell. And, you know, there's some people I talk to who prefer Spencer Dinwiddie over Russell as a basketball player. And, I disagree there, but I like Caris because, D'Lo obviously has the pull-up three, which is very enticing and attractive, but Caris, I think, will develop that as his game goes on. He's not afraid to be a high-volume shooter, but he's also someone who can really get to the basket. He's so crafty on drives and has the potential to be someone who can live at the free-throw line a little bit as his frame kind of builds out a little as he ages. And in terms of, you know, seeing the floor, I think Russell is elite at that. It's one of his best skills, but Caris LeVert is a very good playmaker in his own right. And he's also not a total sieve defensively, which, you know, Russell is not a very good defender and kind of a weak point in their team defense. So I would go with Caris. It's by not the greatest margin, but I think that he'll have probably the better career going forward. And right now, even in this particular matchup, I like him as the primary playmaking force on this team.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Caris LeVert. I think he's one of the shiftiest guys like across the whole NBA. And whereas, like you alluded to, D'Angelo Russell is very creative passing the ball, probably a bit more creative passing the ball, more creative than Caris LeVert. But LeVert, as far as creating his own, he's got a lot more in his package. And I like Dinwiddie a lot, too. The quartet of LeVert, Russell, Harris, and Dinwiddie is very fun. Very fun backcourt. Nets have been awesome to watch this year. And, yeah, I guess I would also pick Giannis over Brad Stevens. just sneak that one in. So let's get into the Magic Raptors. Obviously, most people were aware that DJ Augustine banged in a triple to win Game 1 over the Raptors, the 2 seed with Kawhi Leonard and Marc Gasol in tow. What was your initial reaction, knowing the history of the Raptors of the past 5 years, hearing, or maybe you watched that game, tell me, what's the response when the Raptors go down in Game 1?
Yeah, I mean, I watched that game live. It was a great game. And as you said, you know, Toronto's Game 1 performances are the stuff of lore. And no matter how favored they are, it's kind of thrown out the window in terms of just how I don't really know what happens to them in these games. Game 1's a playoff series at home. But it happened again in that one. I mean, I wasn't too concerned all in all in their ability to win the series. It didn't really impact my calculus in that at all. But it was interesting to see for sure. And you know, DJ Augustine hit some, it was probably the game of his life. He had some ridiculous shots. The game winner was this weird defensive miscommunication between Kawhi and Marc Gasol, a play that I've watched a few times since it happened. And, you know, I just don't think that is replicable in a lot of different ways. And I think, you know, since that has happened, Toronto's, you know, defensively and offensively has gone up a notch, particularly Kawhi Leonard, who's and you know, Pascal Siakam. Those two guys have just had such tremendous series in lifting Toronto to what I think is going to be a 5-game win and advancement. But yeah, that play was surprising in the sense that I did not expect Orlando to be that competitive in this series. But once it fell through, it was just, you know, that's just how things are with the Toronto Raptors in Game 1 of just about any series they've ever played in.
Yeah. When I saw Kawhi Leonard switch out onto Augustine, for the first time in the whole game above the break, on the last possession, I was kind of freaking out. Even though Kawhi is, you know, a former Defensive Player of the Year, I was like, why? What? Like, you got to leave Danny there. They had DJ Augustine locked the whole second half until he hit that three. He'd only scored 3 points. And then all of a sudden, guess what? Kawhi started going with the roll man, as Gasol was too, and then he just walked in a three-pointer. That, oh man, as a Raptors fan, I can hardly express to you how crazy it is to watch those games. Is there anything, I guess like you were saying, it didn't affect your calculus, like your take on how this series would actually pan out? But are there anything, like, what's the wider view for you looking at this series, the big things that stand out to you that have happened?
I think one, and I think the most important thing is that Kawhi Leonard needs to assert himself as by far the best player in the series. And in my opinion, he is that in just about any matchup that Toronto will have going through to however far they go. You know, I'm a huge Kawhi fan, and this regular season that he had was an interesting regular season in that, as you know, there was the whole load management thing and he missed a bunch of games. And in terms of just his peak talent, I still think that he's easily one of the 5 best players in the league and in the world. And what I'm looking for right now is for him to reassert that now that it's the postseason, and not, you know, I'm not saying he took plays off during the regular season, but he was not the same Kawhi Leonard, particularly on the defensive end. So you saw yesterday, he just made some hellacious plays that, you know, really reminded me of who he was and who he used to be and what he's still capable of. So those are the big takeaways I see. And then, you know, just going through the roster real quick, just some other names that have stood out to me. You know, Pascal Siakam is a true marvel and one of the more interesting, I don't really know if, you know, individual comparisons or battles or whatever you want to say, but one of the more interesting things I like to talk about with, you know, fellow writers when we're just having conversations is who's better, Pascal Siakam or Ben Simmons. And like the question is, it's a very difficult one to answer. I personally do not know the answer to the question. And there are nights where after watching Siakam in this series, I'm siding with Pascal, and, you know, his mid-range floater game and his ability to create his own shot in the half court. And, you know, the three-point line used to be a question mark. It's not even close to that anymore. I mean, you don't want to leave this guy open at all. He has all of the, he brings all of the, you know, energetic hustle positives still without, that a role player and an energy hustle player bring without, you know, in his increased high usage role with these bigger minutes. And I just love everything about him and what he's done in this series, particularly against a guy like Jonathan Isaac, who's just a terror to go up against. So those two and how they've played physically against a team that has a very respectable defense, individually and collectively, has been really, really good to see, I think, if you're a Raptors fan.
Yeah, that was the feature I wrote after game one, was I watched every defensive possession Jonathan Isaac had on Pascal Siakam, and then I also watched every time Pascal Siakam scored the ball. As it turned out, in the second half of game one, Pascal Siakam did most of his scoring away from Jonathan Isaac, and when you watch Jonathan Isaac defend him on ball, even though Siakam shot 50% from the field, he didn't get fouled. And Isaac's, like, the way Isaac was able to, like, take away half of the rim, changing, like, Siakam's shot location, like his shoulder slots, where he's releasing the ball from on his layups, adding more arc, just how much more difficult he made it for Siakam. And the fact that Siakam didn't just shy away from it, but the Raptors kept going to him and kept, you know, egging him on to take that matchup. It was one of the best things I'd seen. It's kind of gone to the wayside a little bit in the game three and four, but in the first two games, it was one of the most intriguing things that I'd seen for all of the NBA playoffs so far, was that matchup has been incredible. And I guess, yeah, getting away from the big takeaways then, is there some granular, like something that you feel like you have a really good read on in the Raptors series that other people might not notice?
One thing, you know, I keep jotting down in my notebook is just, you know, Marc Gasol's ball screens are ridiculous. He is clearing out whoever is defending Fred or Kyle or Kawhi. He just clears guys out, forces switches, or if the defense doesn't want to switch, which it does not, because, you know, usually Nick Vucevic is the guy guarding Gasol, who will be dropping, you know, these guys are getting wide open looks. And this is something that I think I'm going to be writing about pretty soon, so I don't want to step on it too much. But going forward, assuming that the Toronto Raptors face the Philadelphia 76ers in round two, you know, you're going to see a lot of those high screens, I think, with Gasol, assuming that Joel Embiid is defending him. And, you know, Embiid does not like being out on the perimeter. He'll switch sometimes, but that's only out of necessity in desperate situations. Like on high screen rolls, he's going to be in the paint at the free throw line, maybe. And, you know, Kawhi's ability to knock down mid-range shots, Kyle Lowry's ability to knock down pull-up threes, particularly those ones in secondary transition. And then just Fred, I think he'll be he'll have an impact in that series as well, because of just how deficient Philadelphia is at defending guys exactly like him. I think Gasol's ball screens are going to be just a menace for Brett Brown and the Philadelphia 76ers in the next series.
Yeah, especially with the Kyle Lowry Gasol pick and roll. That's a very, very dangerous play type for the 76ers, especially. I find that when I watch the 76ers, Joel Embiid, when he's healthy, I don't mind him being out on the perimeter, because even if he does get beat, he's usually pretty good when giving chase. But with his knee, he's obviously, his mobility is a lot more limited. We've seen Joe Harris turn the corner on Joel Embiid a couple times in this series, things that you wouldn't often see if Joe Harris is getting the corner. And I don't mean anything bad by Joe Harris, but that likely means Kawhi Leonard will as well, or Kyle Lowry. And if you let Kyle Lowry get the corner, start gnashing the pick and roll with Danny Green, Pascal Siakam, maybe one of Fred or Norman Powell roaming on the perimeter, it can get really dangerous from behind the line really fast. I guess let's go to the Nets 76er series, and then we'll get back to how we feel about the Raptors. But Nets 76ers, obviously both the Raptors and the 76ers have to get into the second round to play each other. But is there anything that the Nets can do to make sure that the 76ers don't get to the second round to face the Raptors?
I mean, heading into the series, I thought that it was a really bad matchup for Philly. Just, you know, Russell, Spencer, LeVert, those three are, as you know, you used the word shifty to describe Karis, and I thought that's a really good descriptor. You know, the Sixers just aren't equipped. They're huge and they're long and they're physical, but they're not like ideally equipped to defend guys like that, because you know, they're so easy to attack, in that, you know, JJ Redick needs to be on the court almost at all times, or a ton, especially when Joel Embiid is in the game, because there aren't a lot of spacers on Philly's roster. And you know, when you want to play Jimmy, Simmons, and Embiid together, that's just, the floor is just so scrunched. So Redick needs to be out there for offensive reasons. But then defensively, you know, you small screen, and you create switches and mismatches, and you can really get downhill and wreak havoc and rain threes from beyond the arc. So that's an issue for Philly. But at the end of the day, the talent disparity is just so much, where arguably the four best players in the series are 76ers. And if Joel Embiid is healthy and can play over 30 minutes, you know, he was a plus 18 in game four. And, you know, a guy who draws double, even triple teams whenever he posts up or even catches in the mid post area. It's just too much for them to overcome. And Jared Allen has fought valiantly, but he's not there. And Ed Davis, who would still be undersized, has been battling an ankle injury and he can't do it. And, you know, they've resorted to, you know, we talked about Jared Dudley a little bit, and they resorted to playing him at the five. And that's obviously not the answer. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is obviously not the answer. So, you know, I picked Sixers and seven for this series, but I don't see it getting that far. I thought the Nets had to win game four, and they came up short.
Do you think it's six or five? What's your prediction?
Five. Yeah, it's tough, five. But yeah, I don't think that the Nets are going to win another game in Philly as they did game one, when they kind of shocked a Sixers team that clearly wasn't prepared for the playoffs. And I mean, now that these two teams have really felt each other out, and you know, they've kind of mitigated ways that, you know, they can hide JJ a little bit. JJ has done a pretty good job fighting through screens, and guys have been protecting him, drifting off the perimeter and, you know, shrinking the floor as much as possible. So I think that adjustment has helped Philadelphia after the loss that they had in game one, when things were really ugly. I just don't think that the Nets have what it takes, honestly, to win two times in Philadelphia in this series. I could be wrong, and you know, they could go bananas from deep, which is their only chance. And that's the ultimate variable in the NBA playoffs, generally speaking. I think, you know, it would take Embiid not playing and a lot of different things going Brooklyn's way for them to win in game five.
Yeah, I agree. So obviously you and I we both like Caris LeVert a lot. And in a way, I guess we also highlighted how well Siakam has done since entering the playoffs. And for the first time, being a primary ball handler in the playoffs, both he and LeVert have done a really good job of responding to the extra heat in the playoffs, let's say. Is there anyone else in the Nets 76ers series that you've been impressed with? I know that the 76ers had a lot of question marks about how they were going to play stylistically coming into this one, like a Tobias Harris, a Joe Harris, Jared Allen. Is there anybody else you've been really impressed with?
That's a good question. I basically covered almost every Nets game in the regular season. So I saw, you know, there's not really anyone on that team who's been particularly surprising to me. I will say, you know, I don't want to answer this question with Boban because I just don't. But Boban, you know, I think it was game two or game, I can't remember which game it was. They all bleed together for me. But the game where he just would not miss those, you know, elbow jumpers that the Nets were happy to give him. That was, I mean, him hitting those shots was, I thought, the difference in that game. And, Brett Brown has really committed to playing Boban and is committed to having him execute their drop coverage defensively. And, you know, it hasn't always been the prettiest experiment. And I don't think that Boban is someone who can play big minutes in the next round for sure. And he could be Philadelphia's undoing, but he's been interesting. I mean, he's held his own in spots where I wasn't expecting. Beyond that, it's tough to say. You know, Tobias has stood out for moments where he's looked good, because I thought he was an all-star in LA before the trade. Jimmy Butler is Jimmy Butler. He everything he does not surprise me at all. He's a fantastic player. Redick is Redick. So, yeah, I guess I'll just have to settle with Boban. Boban's my answer. That's my guy.
Boban's a good enough answer for me. Bobby and Toby, I'm a subscriber. I like So, yeah, I'll definitely take that. You alluded to something that was very important to the 76ers offense, and obviously with you covering that series, you would notice that the DHOs, dribble handoff. Let's say, for if I don't know the lexicon, dribble handoffs that Embiid and Redick run, a lot of actions above the break on offense. And like you alluded to, Redick is paramount to the 76ers offensive success. Now let's go to the series we're projecting into, 76ers Raptors. JJ Redick will have a lot of attention from the Raptors, as he's going to be, provided that Joel Embiid is healthy, going to be receiving a lot of DHO opportunities, a lot of opportunities off of pin downs, hawk screens. Who do you think on the Raptors should be lining up to chase him on the DHOs, on the hawk screens, on pin downs? Who should the Raptors defend JJ Redick with?
I was actually talking about this with somebody the other day. The way that Toronto matches up with Philadelphia will just be fascinating. I think that, you know, off the top of my head, the guy that stands out for this matchup is Danny Green, but I'm not sure necessarily that that's who you want. I mean, because you need to put Kyle Lowry somewhere. I don't know if you want Kyle Lowry chasing JJ Redick around. And kind of the wear and tear there is concerning, but you also need someone who can, bother. Like if I was Nick Nurse, I don't think that I would be that concerned with putting Lowry on someone like Tobias or even Ben Simmons, to be honest. And, just kind of bait Philadelphia into post-ups that they don't want to actually go to and access. And it's a similar thing with the Celtics and Marcus Smart, where they put Smart on much bigger players and basically dare them to post up, and you don't send help, and you just force one player to score over another. And it just so happens that Smart and Lowry, these guys are like brick walls, and it, you know, good luck trying to take advantage of them and their size. So I think to answer your question, I would start out with Danny Green on Redick and see what happens there. And I think that, you know, Danny has been an all defensive caliber weapon so far. But, you know, what I also like is just their ability to switch out. And, you know, I anticipate in those plays that you're referring to where, you know, Redick starts in the corner and he zips up off of DHO with Embiid at the elbow. I anticipate, you know, Gasol stepping out and, you know, trap and recover is what I foresee with rotations along the back line to help against the rolling Embiid, because they're so long. And so, you know, you can have Siakam and you can have even Ibaka if he were to be in the game as well, probably not in this particular scenario, but you could have Kawhi or anyone along the back line to bother Embiid and really make him put the ball on the floor, at least for one or two dribbles. I think that that is... that's the answer on those plays. And if you eliminate those plays, then I you know, Redick is, he can hurt you in different ways, but that's really the main action that they like to run with him and Embiid in the half court setting. And I just think that Toronto's defense, which has looked so locked in last night, I think that they'll be a nightmare. It'll be a nightmare for them.
Yeah. I'm glad you said Danny Green, because obviously, Gasol in the series against the Magic has shut down Vucevic, completely taken away his post-up offense. So the Magic have resorted to a lot of those above-the-break actions for Fournier, Terrence Ross, DJ Augustine. And Danny Green has been so fantastic, top-locking all of those actions, driving, whether it be if he's on Fournier, Ross. It's generally been Norman Powell or Van Vliet on Ross, but any one of the aforementioned players, driving them into the paint so that they have to shoot, you know, these crowded mid-range jumpers, or that they have to pass out. And like you alluded to as well, that was really illuminating, is that you would put Kyle Lowry on Tobias Harris and challenge Tobias Harris to be a creator off the dribble. And not only that, but Tobias Harris hangs out on the weak side a lot of the time, which allows Kyle Lowry to quarterback. And it's not something you hear often, but Kyle Lowry is very, very good at quarterbacking the back of a defense. He's very good at organizing a lot of the rotations. And when you watch the Raptors, especially, like you said again, the trap and recover that gets involved in, and that defense they've been playing a lot of against the Magic, all those things line up very well for the Raptors. And yeah, like you were saying, it's an interesting series to project the matchups for, because you wouldn't think that a Kyle Lowry-Tobias Harris defensive matchup would be something you'd see, but it very well could be. And if you had to pick between Siakam and Kawhi Leonard, who guards Ben Simmons?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, the regular season, from what I remember, you know, Kawhi dominated Ben Simmons, but I'm not sure if those games, I can't recall if those games came, you know, I don't, like, was... Maybe you can remember, but was Jimmy Butler? I'm pretty sure Jimmy was on the Sixers at the time, but I'm not sure if Tobias was.
Tobias wasn't, yeah.
Okay, so if I were Nick Nurse, I would use Kawhi Leonard as Greg Popovich used to in playoff series, where I would stick him on, you know, maybe not the number one option of the other team, but the number two guy, and I would just completely... I would say, hey, Kawhi, erase this person from the series. And that is what makes Kawhi such an impressive player. You know, if they were to go up against the Bucks in the conference finals, I would much rather have Kawhi just obliterate Chris Middleton than defend Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think that's the smart play there. So I would have... You know, I think I would have Kawhi take away, you know, with the Sixers, the hierarchy is very uncertain beyond Embiid, you know. So I would personally have Kawhi probably just take out Jimmy Butler, because I think he's a more effective, you know, playmaker for them. And he gets guys going a little bit better than Tobias can. So that would probably be, just off the top of my head thinking about it, that's who I would put Kawhi on. But, you know, Pascal is also just, you know, he's arguably had a better defensive season than Kawhi has. So you can't really go wrong with anyone. I mean, like, their defense is just such a monster.
Yeah, totally. And I guess one thing before we get into the, this will be, maybe you can give a decently long answer for this before we get into Twitter questions, is any big takeaways from your favorite team, the Celtics, their series against Indiana, and adversely, the Bucks versus the Pistons, they're likely going to match up. And And then what problems would either of those teams cause for the Raptors, provided that the Raptors get to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, good question. I guess I'll start with the Celtics. And one of the interesting things coming out of that series is just, you know, without, you know, heading into the regular season, heading into the regular season, you know, the Celtics, one of the big plot points there was, you know, everyone wanted to see the Kyrie, Jaylen, Tatum, Hayward, Horford lineup. And you know, it become Boston's version of Golden State's death lineup, where you basically have, you know, you're small, but your five man can protect the rim and do all these different things to make up for that lack of size, while also spacing the floor and facilitating on the break. So that lineup was supposed to be, you know, the tip of the spear for Boston this season, and it obviously has not been. You know, it's played, I think, after the first month of the regular season. Once Boston moved Gordon Hayward to the bench, that lineup has played, I think, 8 minutes, which is just an absolutely ridiculous stat. And in the first round, we saw that lineup, you know, with Marcus Smart out with his oblique injury, we saw that lineup 13 minutes, and it was actually very impressive against the Indiana Pacers, a team that is disciplined defensively. You know, they obviously struggle to score, but, you know, they're very disciplined defensively. They forced a ton of turnovers in that series, and they had pretty, you know, they had some success. I think that Boston's ultimate ceiling will be decided by the success of that lineup. And, you know, that lineup is kind of a nightmare for, it's been a nightmare in the past, or versions of it have been a nightmare in the past for the Philadelphia 76ers. Just playing Horford at the five, generally speaking, you know, running high pick and roll with Kyrie and Horford is just such a, you know, I tweet this so much whenever the Celtics play and they go to it, but that high pick and roll is just so difficult to stop when you go to it over and over again. There's really no obvious answer there. But, you know, a team like the Raptors, they have such, it depends on who they decide to put, you know, who they decide to put on Kyrie. I would imagine that you'll see a ton of Danny Green on Kyrie should those two teams face off against one another. And then you can switch that, and you'll try to see, you know, if Danny Green can hold up in the post with Horford kind of barreling in from the perimeter. That'll be just a really interesting thing to see, you know, with Toronto swarming help defenders, crowding Horford, and then, you know, kickouts and who's going to make threes. It's just, it's all so fascinating to me. So that's the big thing for me. And, you know, the Celtics having success with Horford at the five, as opposed to playing him with someone like Aaron Baines or even Daniel Tice, that's, I think, the ultimate bellwether for Boston as they go through the playoffs. And, you know, I think some teams are better equipped to match up with it than others. And I think that Toronto is one of those teams.
Totally. And so I guess just as a quick before we go to the break, I think it sounds like you think the Raptors match up very well with the 76ers. And I think you, if I were to ask you, you'd probably, well, who wins that series between the 76ers and the Raptors?
I would be pretty confident in Toronto in that series. I don't know how long it goes. I think that Toronto is so much more versatile. They have so many more capable weapons off the bench. You know, even a guy like Norm Powell, Norm, like, the Sixers have no one who's even close to as good as Norm Powell. Like, and that's just, that's kind of the fatal flaw of their roster design and how they've been constructed. You know, they don't have a lot of two-way wings who can defend capably on the perimeter, switch, be physical, keep their guy in front of them while also knocking down open shots and maybe even attacking a closeout or two. You know, James Ennis is not the answer for them. It's a reason. There's a reason why Daryl Morey got rid of James Ennis, because he can't defend in space, as we've seen in the Nets series. So, yeah, I would definitely lean towards the Raptors as heavy favorites in that series. And, you know, that's one of the reasons they got Marc Gasol, I would imagine, to bother Embiid and not necessarily have to double as much as other teams have to. So, yeah, I really like Toronto in that series.
So who is Toronto playing in the Eastern Conference Finals then? The Bucks or the Celtics?
My gut instinct, to be honest with you, just as a basketball analyst, is like 51-49 Boston. And I say that because I think the Celtics are able to play Brook Lopez off the floor in a way that completely alters how the Milwaukee Bucks want to play basketball on both ends. So if you can get Brook Lopez off the floor, that just, I mean, he's obviously a devastating spacer. You know, if you've seen any of the Bucks Pistons series, what he's doing to Andre Drummond is just embarrassing. And I don't think he'll be able to do that against the Celtics for a variety of reasons. I think defensively, you're not going to be able to drop against this team. They have too many guys who love the pull-up jumper, love pull-up threes. Al Horford is a pick-and-pop guy who will shoot you to death. So that's kind of why I'm leaning towards Boston. And Boston just has a lot of they have a lot of discipline and transition, which is how Giannis really wants to kill you. And they have big guys who are strong, who can keep him at bay and force him to shoot as they did last year. Granted, last year, you know, they had Jabari Parker instead of Brook Lopez on the floor and different spacers. And Eric Bledsoe was a total minus in that series and still went to seven. So I think that I just think they're really... They're evenly matched, more so than a lot of people, I think, anticipate based on what we saw in the regular season. And, you know, it could come down to home court being the difference, in which case, obviously, Milwaukee would eke it out. But I think that Kyrie is a difference maker in crunch time against just about any team in the league, any system in the league. And the way Gordon Hayward has played of late, the way Jason Tatum has played of late, I'm slightly siding with the Celtics.
Yeah, the Celtics for me is obviously Kyrie is able to score, I guess, at when it comes to the most important time of the game. I think that he's one of the players. Players would choose him. Analysts would choose him. If you need a bucket, he's likely going to give it to you. That is one of the most important things in the playoffs. And also, like you alluded to, Al Horford can play Brook Lopez off the floor in a unique way. And of the Brook Lopez, Marc Gasol, Joel Embiid, Al Horford of the top four teams in the East, Al Horford is by far the most unique. And he provides problems for the Raptors, the Bucks, the 76ers, that just they can't be replicated by any of the other top four teams or any other top three teams. So yeah, I totally get why the Celtics might be a team that you choose, especially since they haven't hit their, I guess, hypothetical ceiling or even sniffed it yet. So I totally get that. And maybe if we get there, I'm sure we can come back and have a long conversation about what a Raptors Celtics series would look like. For now, we'll do the ad break, and then we'll get into the Twitter questions afterwards.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Accidents happen, and when they do, you'll want a lawyer who will stand up to the insurance company and fight for your rights. In case of emergency, have this name in your back pocket, Goldfinger, Brian Goldfinger. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome back to the Raptors Weekly Podcast. Your host, Samson Folk here with Michael Pina of SB Nation. And we're going to actually be answering some Twitter questions that you guys asked. A tweet was sent out and you responded under it. Nicholas Henry at N2Henry asks, who would be your team of the first round of the playoffs? I'm guessing this is a top five. Who's the top five best players of the first round so far, in your opinion?
Who are the top five best players?
Of the first round. So let's say if James Harden, if his 3-for-20 game knocks him out of the top five so far, then of the first round, let's say he's not in it. But it's your choice, of course.
First of all, I think I would... would I still have James Harden in the top five? That's an interesting question. I still have James in the top five, even though, that was a brutal shooting performance to start game three. Still finished with 22-10 though, and six steals and the W.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But he is incredible. I gotta throw out Dame Lillard. He's just thoroughly outplaying Russell Westbrook, in my opinion, in a way that really shows the contrast between those two guys and their values to their respective organizations. I would take Dame in a heartbeat over Russ, and it's not even close, in my opinion. And he's really showing why. Some of the daggers that he hit in the third quarter yesterday were just like eye-watering. He's so great, and I'm really happy for him and just the Portland organization for, all the hardship they've gone through. And it looks like they have somewhat, I don't want to say an easy path, but once they get past Oklahoma City, which feels inevitable, the path to the conference finals, where just about anything could happen in terms of health, is pretty open for them. I like them. I like them over Denver, and I actually like San Antonio in that series. So that'll be really interesting. So yeah, keep it short. I like Dame. I like Kawhi. We've talked plenty about him. He's just, in my opinion, the best player in the Eastern Conference, and he's showing it in this series against a really good defensive team. How many is that? Says three guys, like two more.
Dame, Kawhi, yeah.
I'll throw Giannis in there out of respect for him and just how he's thoroughly annihilated the Detroit Pistons. And then I told you that I like to be as objective as possible, but I'm gonna just have Kyrie as my number five and leave Kevin Durant off the list.
Yeah, that's totally okay. Speaking to your Dame selection, it is a little bit, it's disappointing that the Warriors exist, because otherwise it seems like there's a path to the NBA Finals for Damian Lillard to pioneer the Blazers there, and that's a very fun NBA, I think, like where one of Giannis, Kyrie, Kawhi, Damian Lillard, James Harden can all take their team to a championship. Whereas it seems like this year it's going to be Steph and KD doing their thing again. But yeah, that's a pretty good five. I'm happy with that. I guess the next question, let's get to Chris Petre at Petre _29. Is there a better player at taking charges than Kyle Lowry in NBA history?
In NBA history?
It's weird to be, I guess, a prolific charge taker. You know, it's not something that kids grow up wanting to be. Aaron Kraft, the Ohio State guard. I remember that was like his calling card in college, but he's never prolific in the NBA. I don't know who it would be. Boogie was really good at it for a very long time.
Just like going off the top of my head here, like the guy who is really annoyingly great at it is Ersan Ilyasova, who like routinely leads the league. I'd throw him in there. I think the rule, whenever I watch him take a charge, I think the rules should be just completely changed, because it's like anytime a guy goes out of their way to take a charge, it's just like a dangerous play. Like I don't like it. Like, I will say, you know, strategically, Kyle Lowry took a charge in yesterday's game on Jonathan Isaac. That was his third foul that took him out of the game and kind of tilted the winning percentage in Toronto's favor dramatically. I thought, like, that type of charge is really interesting to me and really useful. But some of the charges Ilyasova's taken over the years are just like, dude, come on. I will say, even on Toronto's, like, like Kyle Lowry's teammate, Marc Gasol, he takes some charges, man. Like he's got that down pat. I guess among guys who are retired, just off the top of my head again, Scottie Pippen, when I was growing up watching him take charges, he was really good at it. And now he like has a terrible back. So that's why you don't take charges. In NBA history is probably going a stretch, but there aren't too many guys right now at that position who do it more fearlessly, I would say, than Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you as well as how I look at charges. And it is strange to look at, because when I play basketball, like if I'm playing a league game or something like that, and somebody takes a charge, and you know they just wanted to take the charge, they're not like playing good defense, you're a little bit annoyed at it. But being a Toronto Raptors fan, when I watch Kyle Lowry do it, I feel like it's, you know, it's a divine process. Like, oh yes, he's done it again. Like Matt and Jack, the announcers, like it's like they're giving a sermon when they talk about it. But then like you think about it in a nutshell, you're just like, that is not basketball. Like, what am I watching? Like, Kyle Lowry's doing his best to have another man fly at him out of control and just smash into him. And then in the game, that's very effective. It's a strange thing. But yeah, being a Raptors fan, obviously, well, a Raptors analyst, let's say, let's give myself a pat on the back there, watching, you know, you have to cheer and analyze Marc Gasol and Kyle Lowry do it. I mean, it starts to look like, you know, it's a sprinkle of genius. When in reality, if I watch like any other player do it to Raptors player, I'm like, oh my God, can you just defend him, please? Like, stop flopping everywhere. The fan comes out and me. Anyway, yeah, I don't know who does it better than Lowry in NBA history, but I'm sure there's somebody. Last question, and then we'll let you go. One trade a day. That's the guy's name. If you had to choose an 8-player rotation for the Raptors for the rest of the playoffs, assuming OG is okay coming back from his appendicitis, who would you go with? Do you have any specific Raptors rotation takes, or would you like me to do this one?
What's really interesting about Toronto, I think, is how often they've leaned on their starting five in this series. I believe that I looked this up this morning, 40%, just about 40% of their total minutes have gone with the starting five, that unit on the court, which is pretty impressive and leads all teams. I'd have Ibaka as the backup five, and I would have Fred as the backup one, and who starts second quarters beside Lowry and Pascal. I really like how that's happened. Pascal's probably playing too many minutes, but I like how Nick Nurse has not really messed around with other guys and, you know, just to play them. I don't know if OG's interest. Like, I don't know if OG is the answer there. He might be the obvious eighth guy. What are your thoughts? You know the team better than I do.
I like OG a lot, especially when watching the last game. game four, Pascal Siakam, for the first time in this series, played less than 37 minutes. It's the one game he even played 43. I think that was game three, the one in which he had 30 points. It was incredible. But you have to give Pascal a little bit of a break. I know he's an absolute workhorse, and his hustle, his, I guess, intangibles are terrific, but you don't want to play him from the first round on 42 minutes a game. And OG, the way the Raptors have constructed their roster, Masai Ujiri, let's say, OG has been operating as the de facto backup power forward for most of the season, and that has been tough for him to transition to, but good for the Raptors because it allows the Raptors to play more of those two guard lineups that they like. And also, I mean, I don't think we're very far removed from OG Anunoby hitting a game tying three in the dying seconds in the second round against the Cavs in game three before LeBron launched that stupid one floater, stuff like that. But OG hit the three-pointer to tie the game prior to that. He was awesome last year. He's had a very turbulent year with the death of his father and injury problems and a lot of stuff for himself. But I think OG could really, really come back strong if he was allowed to take the eighth man spot in the rotation. So I put OG ahead of Norm. But I don't think Nurse has to be particularly obtuse in choosing one over the other. If I had to choose eight people, it would be the starting five and then Ibaka, Van Vliet, and OG, provided that OG were healthy. But luckily for Nurse, he doesn't have to strictly run just eight guys. He can go to Norman Powell if Norman Powell needs to come off the bench and chase JJ Redick, something like that. Or if Tobias Harris is uniquely advantageous against the Raptors, OG is the guy to guard him with. I mean, I wrote a feature on him, and I think he guarded like 90 possessions combined against Ben Simmons, LeBron James, Caris LeVert, and one other superstar who I can't think of, but it only resulted in 6 attempted shots. OG as a team defender, long way to go, but if you need to throw him out there to defend a guy and do a really good job, he's fantastic. So there's value in Norm Powell and OG. So you don't really have to go to any man rotation, even if that's not so great. And now's the time to let you go so you can get back to your life and and start writing stuff that's, you know, more important and far more concise than me on this podcast. So we'll let you go. Feel free to plug anything that you want. Tell the people about yourself.
Yeah, just, I guess, follow me on Twitter at Michael V. Pina. And that's where I tweet all my work. And also, if you would like to subscribe and listen to my own podcast, the Winning Plays podcast, that would be cool too. But that's about it. And thank you so much for having me, man. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been a blast. You've been able to talk a lot more granular than most, I think, league-wide guys I find are able to. So that's been awesome. You've been able to get into the devil in the details. So this has been great.
Yeah, I watch too much basketball, that's why.
Never too much. Not until, you know, you find that the rest of your life and your social network is falling apart. But, you know, it's our favorite thing. So we're going to cover it, we're going to write about it, we're going to play it. Anyway, man, thank you so much for coming on. And for everybody listening, I hope you have a great day. Have a blessed day, and take care.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply.